As we remember our loved ones on this All Souls Sunday, parishioners and friends and family members, we now hear and honor the names of those who have died in the last year. Martha Alderman, Bob Bartlett, Dorothy Burns, Alec Clement, Peter Colburn, Mary Cox,
Edie Earle, Ray Eisenbees, Anne Hutchinson, Margaret Jewell, Brad Pope, Priscilla Westcott,
Ned Carr, Rondi Cornett, Ruth Falk, Joe Miller, Richard Pinckney, George Backos,
Anthony De Paola, Harry Sumas, Constantine Dean Limbarakis, Sister Carolyn Darr, SSM, Orly Swatzentruber, Warren Robert Molds,
June Miller, Dina Iantosca Hennessy, Edward Boys, Alfred Romeo, Molly Ryan,
Kristen Appel, Joanne Slodden, Nicole Gaudet, Richard Salisbury,
Josephine Bray DiGiorlamo, Lorraine Mitchell Carroll, Mary T. Kelly Millen, Frederick R. Millen Jr., Dolores Dilo Margaret Minjone Ninerell,
James K. Henderson, Regina M. Brennan Griffin, David C. Sullivan, Dorothy Dimling Lane, Daniel Francis Scooter Wheeling,
Jean Elizabeth Hagen Schultz, William R. Wilkins, Frederick Gale Fellows Jr., Deanne Spencer Cardiff, Dr. Joyce G. Harrington,
Anna Margaret White Cleveland, Mary Ellen Kibbe Payne, Dorothy Bloom Meyer, Laura Jean Anderson, Lori Jean Delila Canistrin, Dr. Ann Campbell Gulak, Felicia Ann Caraway Mudd.
May the souls of the faithful departed, through the mercy of God, rest in peace and rise in glory.
Years ago, I made a last-minute decision to fly home to Chicago for Thanksgiving. Flight prices had plummeted in those last days, and I was missing my family. So I flew in on Thanksgiving afternoon for a surprise 24-hour visit. That night, my brothers and I made the 30-minute drive to visit my Uncle Chuck. I say uncle, but that doesn't really capture it. My uncle was my dad's only sibling. He was his partner and co-worker at The Shop, the auto repair business they founded where all of us were charged with helping out. For the first year of my life, he and his family were our upstairs neighbors, and his kids were our favorite cousins. And to me, he was my gumpare, my Italian godfather. At the end of Thanksgiving night, he walked me out and waited on the front stoop as I got into my brother's car. I blew him a kiss and he waved as I drove away. The next day, we got a call from the shop. My uncle wasn't feeling well, and my dad, who had lingered with me over coffee, needed to hurry in. Dad started to get himself together, and then we got another call, and my dad rushed out the door. Before he could drive the mile to the shop, my perfectly healthy uncle had died of a heart attack. He was here, and then he was gone. And as I said over and over again in those first weeks and months, it felt like standing on the edge of an abyss, like the earth had opened up and the ground in front of me had just disappeared. And I was left looking out into nothingness. Today, we remember all of those who, as the prayer book puts it, we love but see no longer. I imagine that many of us are holding someone or maybe someone's in particular in our hearts. For some of us, it was sudden. For others, it was a long road, maybe even a relief. And for some, it's in between. However prepared we are or aren't, whatever that means, it can feel like a hole has been torn in our lives. There is an absence, an emptiness, a missing. As we keep living, we are painfully aware of all the spaces in our lives the person we love used to fill. As we keep living into our futures, we stumble into the places that we hoped and imagined that they would be. And if we are left with unresolved conflict, with hurts that had not had the chance to heal, the edges of that hole are particularly jagged. In the face of the abyss, we are not alone. Our scriptures are full of stories of people who have to figure out how to keep living in the after exile, after death, after their own terrible mistakes, after everything falls apart. In fact, that's the story of the church, figuring out how to live after Jesus. All these people, they offer us both wisdom and companionship. We find some of that wisdom in this morning's gospel, which comes from the last week of Jesus' life. Palm Sunday has already happened, and Jesus is in Jerusalem. He's been hanging out in the temple, doing his last bit of teaching and ministry. And the chief priests, scribes, and leaders are afraid of how the Romans will respond to Jesus. So here at the temple, they're challenging him, sparring and disputing with him in an attempt to discredit him. It's not working. And in this particular passage, the Sadducees take their turn. The Sadducees are among the Jerusalem elites, and most importantly for our purposes today, they regard only the Torah, the first five books of the Jewish Bible, as scripture. And because resurrection is not mentioned explicitly in these books, they don't believe in it. So they step up to try to stump Jesus and prove their point about the resurrection in one fell swoop. So they offer Jesus this bizarre hypothetical scenario. A man dies, leaving behind a childless widow. And according to a tradition in the Torah, a man's brother marries the widow. According to a tradition in the Torah, the man's brother marries the widow, but he also dies. In fact, all seven brothers eventually marry the woman and die, none of them producing a child. Aha, they say. How could the resurrection deal with that? This hypothetical is upsetting to me. This tradition was designed to protect widows, who did in fact have agency. But here, pushed to its preposterous extreme, she's treated like a piece of property. And it's upsetting because Jesus seems to be saying that there is no marriage in the resurrection, And for those of us who long to be reunited with people we love, it's a slap in the face. So let me be very clear. Jesus is not saying that we won't be reunited with the people we love. Not in the least. It's important to keep in mind that the Sadducees are trying to stump Jesus. They're not coming to him for pastoral counsel. And if they were, I dare say he would have responded much differently. Jesus is refusing to answer the question. He's saying, it is entirely beside the point. Life in the resurrection is qualitatively different than life on earth. Our existence is transformed, and we become like angels. The rules and concerns and questions that plague us on earth, they will not matter in the resurrection. You are missing the point. You are missing the great gift that God is offering. But it's really Jesus' second response that offers wisdom for living in the after. He argues that the Torah does actually affirm the resurrection. And his argument is based, of all things, on grammar. When God speaks to Moses from the burning bush, God says, I am the God of Abraham. I am the God of Jacob. I am the God of Isaac. God speaks of our forebears in the present tense. All those we love but see no longer, we may speak of them in the past tense. But God speaks of them in the present tense, because to God, in God, all of them are alive. For Jesus, on the threshold of the Passion, these questions about death and resurrection are not hypothetical. He has fears and anxieties, and he's concerned about his friends who, despite his repeated warnings, still don't see this coming. His death will shake them to their core, leaving them feeling like they are standing at the edge of the abyss. So Jesus offers his response in the hearing of these friends. To God, all who have gone before are still alive. We no longer see or touch the people we love who have died. But that doesn't mean that they are gone. What looks and feels initially like a hole, an absence, is not actually nothingness. In the days and weeks after my uncle died, as the shock began to wear off, and I could start looking beyond what was missing, I could begin to lay hold of what I believe and know to be true. As the prayer that we will say at the Eucharist, the same prayer that we say at every funeral, puts it, to your faithful people, O Lord, life is changed, not ended. Life is changed, not ended. Different, not gone. Those we love and see no longer are alive in God, and they remain bound to us in the communion of saints, in the life of God of which we too are part. With Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rebecca, Jacob and Leah and Rachel, they are part of the company of heaven. They join with us in the heavenly chorus as we gather at this table and sing. And they share with us in this banquet. And they walk with us, continuing to love us and companion us as we keep living in the after. Today, we honor and hold these things together. The grief we rightfully have for the ones we love but see no longer, and our hope that through the grace and love of God, they are still alive. They remain bound to us. And one day we will see them again, face to face.